This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, we're fine.
I thought it would be great if we can kind of just have a conversation with David and Mary about what's been going on with employees. I don't know if anybody wants to jump in and start. This is when they all sit quiet.
Well, maybe just one thing to say is that Mary's been keeping me focused on the responses to the employee survey. And so I hope we can talk a little bit about that, give Mary a chance to fill in some things, and also working with vice presidents and deans on their part of it. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about what the impressions are around the table, maybe after Mary has a chance to swallow.
Well, I can jump in and say that from the EA perspective, we've done we've had quite a few people here sitting on committees that have been working through response to the survey, and I think we've all had really, really positive experience with that, so I really appreciate that we were kept so involved in that process, and that it wasn't only EA members, but open to the whole campus community to volunteer. I think that really showed that there's a vested interest in supporting and hearing what the staff had to say. And then we did a bunch of open forums and put out kind of the recommendations to employees, and we've had really positive feedback. So I think that's been really, really great. And where the committees are putting together kind of final recommendations in a very brief summary for you to kind of look at. And then if you want to read all the many, many pieces of paper behind that, we'll have those available. But we're moving that along. You should have that in the next couple weeks.
Okay. I would like to read some of the papers. That would be good.
Any other thoughts or?
The trustees just visited campus. Maybe when you get a chance, just a high level 2-minute overview of what was successfully completed and moving forward.
Can I do that now?
You can.
Okay.
Sure.
One of the big issues that they wanted to hear about was the movement to divest from fossil fuel investments. And this is a movement by student activists across the country. And it's a, it's a movement that's designed not to try to get everything to happen right now, but to change the investments of large investment funds to emphasize renewable fuels and not to emphasize fossil fuels. No big schools have divested from these investments yet, but the investment committee at Cornell, which is where the decisions are finalized, has formally charged the chief investment officer, A.J. Edwards, to actively seek to increase the amount of investment in renewable fuels. And there's about $60 million out of $5 billion, $5.5 billion actually, invested in that now. So I yielded my time in my first report to a couple of students from Kyoto now who talked about the movement. So that was a piece of the board meeting. Then there was a review of cybersecurity and IT strategic planning on both campuses by Ted Dodson, Curtis Cole, who is a physician at the medical school, who also does all the IT stuff. And then the rest of the meeting, it's not one of those meetings where there were major things passed, like the budgets or those assumptions and so on that were passed prior to this meeting. So there's a lot of discussion about different issues. And then the board has also chosen again and again to have shared governance groups report. And so there was a little discussion in the private session. The board has some private sessions where they're everybody there about even increasing contact more between the board leadership and the shared governance groups. And can you guys remind me, do representatives of the EA meet with?
They did.
Yeah, we had breakfast with the board on last Wednesday morning.
Okay, good. So maybe that was why it was in their mind. So that's great. I really appreciate that you do that. Was that a good exchange?
Yeah, I think it was good. A lot of people there and some good table conversation and a larger group discussion, which I think is nice.
And so what did I forget, Mary? Sort of a quick rundown.
The student assembly and GPSA gave us their report. Medical College gave their annual report any budget assumptions.
Budget assumptions, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anything about like the tech campus footprint at all? Like the Dan Huttenlocker report out and
Kathy and Josh Seierman, who's a consultant, gave information about there's four buildings that are going to be built on that campus for starters. For starters means during my lifetime.
My interest is going to do it. Yeah.
Well, my interest really tends not to extend beyond my lifetime. But they're trying to get third-party developers to go on the campus and build things that they would own, or we would own jointly, that there would be rental inside. And they talked about some of the ins and outs. There's a sort of a catch-22 on that new campus like that. Roosevelt Island is not like a big destination in New York. There are some things people go there for, but it's not a big destination. And so if the campus was up and running, it would be much easier to attract people to put in shops and things, you know, where there'd be people there to more people to patronize them. There's 12,000, maybe 13,000 people living on Roosevelt Island, something in that order of magnitude. Some of them are staff or postdocs who work at Weill Cornell, and then other folks have lived there, you know, for generations. But because right now there's chronic care hospital and nothing there to attract business, retail business to speak of, it's hard to get the first people, you know, to commit to put some money in there under the assumption that it's all going to, all the ships will rise. And so that's the issue they're having now, is trying to get third-party developers to go in with the minimum of financial guarantees. And it's understandable they want to have guarantees that if they make an investment, what if they build a residential building that doesn't fill up, or what if they build a building that would have some retail and people don't come. Mm-hmm. So so they did talk about that. So thanks, Joe. That
was,
David, or maybe Mary, how many staff members are there at the tech campus so far?
It's just 11.
Okay. So when would be a good time? I know we talked about them being part of the shared governing system, just like Jeanette. When would be a good time to kind of start involving them, or is it too small still?
I don't know that it's too small. I think the difficulty is their time. They're a very busy group of folks, so I'm not sure that we get a lot of their time. The person to talk to would be Julie DeLay.
Okay.
She does their HR, so I think reaching out and talking to her would be a good first start.
Yeah, I think even if we can just welcome them and invite them and make sure that they know that they're part of.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. Well, the GPSA is the same thing with the grad students, as I think you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is the time. I think what Mary said is important, that right now they're running around in circles trying to just barely get everything done. In other words, pretty much like us.
Yeah.
But so they may not be as enthusiastic to have meetings, but I think it would be really responsive, and I appreciate you reaching out.
At least put the tether out there.
Yep.
And if they don't participate actively, they'll know that they can.
The other thing is that, just quick, is that if you happen to be down there, especially, you know, someone in a leadership position, and you want to, you know, organize just a little tour of the place right now in the Google building, you'd be more than welcome to do that.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's a different topic, if that's all right. Just wanted to get either of your thoughts on Resolution 4. And I know that there's a formal response coming down, but I didn't know if you wanted to maybe have an informal discussion about it here at this time.
Actually, I didn't even have a chance to tell David. So the David drafted a response, shared it with Vice President, asked me to share it with the teams, which I did, and they
are
fine. So
okay.
We're done.
Yeah, it's a pretty positive response.
Okay.
It's a tiny bit higher level in some aspects and some of the details, but I think you'll see it as responsive to the resolution. And I guess we can send it out.
Yeah, ready to go.
Like tomorrow or something.
Okay. So I think you'll. I hope you'll understand that what we were trying to balance was a. The president's overall endorsement of the concept with the issue that a lot of the requests would have been very labor intensive to do, and so we're trying to recognize that the survey results about workload extend everywhere, and so had we responded to all of the requests, we simply don't have the staffing to respond to all of those requests. It would have been onerous, frankly, to do some of the things that were in there. So what we wanted to do was really understand the intention of it and respond to it without finding that some of the very people that are finding it difficult to get their work done might have had a reaction, because who would have done that work are some of the very people that are saying they can't get their current work done.
But we thought, and Mary really was the architect of this, we think we found a way to be responsive to the spirit of it, and just have to see what happens. And, you know, as always, give us straightforward feedback to how you think, you know, where is it missing, where is it not. I guess we can get that out by Friday.
Yeah. I think the president and the provost, so we're to both the vice presidents and the team, it's very clear that the expectation is that this is an ongoing expectation, that they will continue to work at their colleges and units to respond to the issues that come up. That we did the survey with the intention that we were going to respond to what we heard.
Yeah, I think for the group here, we're hearing from some pockets of campus who are very engaged, and you're hearing, you know, this group has made some progress in areas, and other groups are having meetings, but then you're hearing nothing from other components of campus.
Yeah.
So we wanted
yeah.
to make sure that we're at least hearing something from everyone.
And that was why it was encouraging. I just heard here for the this news that the deans were good with it, and the vice presidents were good with it, and provost was good with it. So I think that's good.
Let's go 2 for 2. I know you have a lot on your plate to care fund. Have you talked? I know you did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Looking to endow the care fund. Okay.
Yeah. So I think just one.
So why don't we just talk about it?
So
it's your brainchild, Joe. Go ahead.
Well, so as we know, the care fund is an important cause, and it seems like every year it goes and coffers in people's budgets, including Mary's budget, to help fulfill the needs of the committee.
We won't be able to do that going forward. I can share with you what happened to my coffers, but what happens when it's not a coffer anymore? It's a cough. I know.
Right.
It's a cough.
Right. So in order to maintain it without having to have people, contribute every year on the line in the budget, I thought the just the former development office would just endow it. And the target amount, after talking with Mary and people on the committee that actually awarded the varying amounts, was if we endowed the care fund for $500,000 to yield approximately 5%, that would give us an operating budget of $25,000 a year. And, you know, that's something we met with Charlie Flagler, first suggested with Mary, and then Charlie was kindly put in your plate to address on behalf of the executive staff. you know, we were with the. It's something that's important that I think is goodwill for a couple things. It's obviously it's a good funding effort for the Cornell staff and faculty community. It's also a way that if we endow it, I think it would be a nice PR piece maybe in the Chronicle of Higher Ed. Mm-hmm. Tommy Bruce can run with that, and Tommy could run with it also in philanthropist. And it's just a way of giving back. And so it's not competing with the United Way or any other good philanthropic opportunity. But since we clearly try and hodgepodge a lot of work for options, et cetera, why don't we just make a bold effort to endow it? And with Ken's support of finding them the USP or somewhere, UPS, sorry, University.
No, it's
US. I think you're right.
I think it is
US. Yeah, UBS, USP, all those different acronyms. But anyway, if all the deans and vice presidents do like a one-time dip, or some kind of figure out how to get the seed money to endow it, then we'll be in good shape. That was just the basis of the premise.
So 25. I thought it was more than that for some reason.
It has been of late. So what happened? the care fund came into being. I don't actually remember. We had some bad thing happen, and we put together the care fund.
No. Way before when it first started.
It was a long time ago, and the group got together and distributed the funds, and then we realized that something bad was going to happen. And so the university seeded it with money, and the employee assembly put together the auction to try to keep it going. And in normal years, where nothing really bad happened, they would give the money away on it's pretty stringent requirements. So house burns down or something really bad happens.
Davey and the NICU and helping look at that. Jennifer, because she's on the awarding committee with Bridget. But the point is that it's everything from people in need above and beyond, like
I'm aware, but I've actually contributed to it,
right.
personally
okay.
contributed
and
to it. But
it's
put
a
the
lot,
amount.
A lot of work by the committee
right.
each year in an annualized way to put the money in there. And then what you're thinking of is that when we had the floods
right.
or things like that, then the university is contributing again. And so we keep reseeding it with money when a particularly bad thing.
Right. But 25 is a good target because I thought it was more than that. Okay.
Well, and then what is likely to happen is if you have something like the illegal floods again, you'll need more than that.
Yes.
But what would be really nice is if we had this endowment and we knew we had that kind of money to work with every year, then when we do the auctions and we make, $7,000, $10,000, we can add that to the endowment and then we're getting a little more, we're growing it rather than having this feeling of, like, last year I think we made $15,000 in the auction. This year we only made $7,000.
Yep.
It's really difficult and it would
be nice
to be able
to know that you have something kind of. The only comment I have, it's obviously a really worthwhile, positive thing that I feel strongly about, and I'll definitely work on it. The one thing about endowments is when they're all established and they're all funded, it's fabulous. If you don't find one or two angels who really want to put massive money in cash right now,
mm-hmm.
then by the time the thing builds up, you still have to find an annual cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
And so let me work with Mary and Charlie.
Yeah.
And I'll actually do it myself. I'll do it as
okay.
part of my fundraising thing, but it may be easier to try to aim at some annual amount while we're trying to build up an endowment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Oh, we appreciate it. We
just
want to.
Just because it takes a while to build it up. So, okay, I'll
we just wanted to do our due diligence with Charlie, and we certainly didn't want to be inappropriate at the breakfast with the trustees and all, and everybody targets trustees. But we wanted to go through the proper communication of. Instead of, like you said, eventually it's endowing the proper way to do it.
Yep.
It's not
I think you're totally right. It's a great way to do it.
Okay.
It's just, what do you do until the checks come in? So, okay, we'll work on it. Good. That was good.
Other comments or thoughts or pulse on other topics?
Good. I don't know how much you've seen of the proposals, but I've just never
nothing
seen
yet. Waiting to get them.
So I'm. Well, we can give you a bit of a rundown. So recognition is one that started before kind of the survey came out. So that's doing really well. They've established the recognition event days. And several new awards, so that's moving along really well. And we've had mixed response on the recognition days. Some people say, you're giving me a donut and a granola bar. I want this or I want that. But we've also had several people. I mean, a lot of us sat at tables and having people come up and say, "This is so nice. It's so nice to hear. Thank you." So I think it generated a lot of goodwill. And that's something that the EA is also working on, just kind of being really positive and trying to do more acknowledgement of staff and people who are doing good work. So that is really moving along well. There was the energy project. There's a group that looked at energy projects. So there'll be a proposal coming forth to maybe targeting some training and some really key groups that might need that more, try to generate some positive spin on it across campus and then see if it's something we want to push out to the rest of the university. Position evaluation and analysis. So opportunities, we heard a lot of feedback from employees that their jobs have changed or they're doing the work of several employees. So putting out more information, employees could already say, "I want my job reviewed," but we put more of a time around that so that the employee knows if they want their position looked at, that there's a time frame by which they'll get a response so that they know when they can hear something back. Along with that, there's alignment and change tools who are looking at opportunities to work with either intact work groups or individuals to say, okay, your job is maybe out of scope, you've taken on a lot, how can we streamline things? And Kathy Burkert and her group is running that, and they've come back with some really great feedback on groups that they're already working with that it's doing really well. Then the career options. That's one of the ones that, you know, there's an advisory committee that's doing a lot of great work there. They've already put together career ladders. Those were kind of out there before the survey response. What we're hearing in the open forums and within the group is that it's really difficult for employees to move around campus. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly difficult. I've heard a lot, you have to leave Cornell and come back from the outside in order to move. And that's, I think, really disappointing.
In order to be competitive for the job.
Yeah, that you have to leave and come back. And so there really needs to be, I think, more emphasis on succession planning and training and opportunities for employees. And that group is putting together a lot of really great suggestions, things like when HR directors get together, not only talking about people who may be on layoff, but also talking about people who are interested in moving and growing and how can we move them around, things like rotation, things like stretch assignment. So a lot of really great stuff coming out of that. Supervisor feedback is an area of real concern. A lot of people think that's really great, but there's still a whole lot of fear, and where that fear is in the smaller work groups.
Yeah.
So how to deal with that. We've actually partnered with the Leading Cornell Group, who has taken that on, and they're going to look at training and how to implement this in a really good way. The big question is anonymity, and then how do we deal with the staff member who reports to a faculty member? Because those faculty members may not be doing the same type of performance evaluations. And then for the academic staff, it's a little bit different as well. So how do those pieces play? And we're still trying to figure that out. And then I think the last piece, I think I got them all. The last piece is was feedback on fair application of policy, and a lot of that stemmed into wellness and kind of personal development time. And what we're finding is that some pockets on campus, you know, are very generous and very supportive of employees going out and doing wellness or going out and doing the employee degree program, but other pockets of campus aren't. And this is, I think, kind of the most difficult and controversial one, I think, to get past, because there's a lot of issues surrounding it. But the recommendation is to create a policy in policy 6.9 to support 2.5 hours of release time a week for employees to be able to go to the gym, to take a walk, to take a class, to develop themselves here at Cornell. Now, that there's quite a few issues or concerns with that in terms of how do you deal with dining staff or staff at the hotel, the cleaning crews and things like that, or units that are having a, you know, have smaller staff so they can't let people go. So
covering,
I think that
coverage,
yeah. You know, in the animal hospital, the vet college is a huge piece, labs. So that's, I think, the biggest hurdle. But, you know, we've got a lot of studies backing that, you know, sending someone out and getting them energized and taking a walk is going to bring them back and they're going to be more productive. So those are kind of the key things that we're looking at. And kind of the overarching idea is to change the culture for staff at Cornell and to have supervisors say, okay, you know, there's that fear of we're not going to get the work done because people are doing wellness, but we don't know until we try it. The engineering program is doing it, and I think doing it very successfully. There are case studies out there. We just got an article today about the importance of wellness and getting out and exercising and coming back and being stronger employees and more productive. So I think that's going to be the biggest hurdle, but I think it is the one that is one of the more important pieces.
Well, the energy project supports that whole thing in a big way. So you won't be surprised to know that Mary, of course, has already been talking about some of these things in staff, senior staff meetings. But this is one of these, I want to ask you a general question, and also Mary. One of the things that happens to me as I go around, I try to spend, make sure I visit all the shared governance groups on a regular basis. I'll be with ESA tomorrow, and we had student leaders yesterday, and UFC last week, and you guys now, is because of my schedule, and just the timing of when things get done, I maybe do it a couple times a year, a couple times a semester, depending on the group. So something like this, where everybody's been unbelievably busy, I'll probably get these recommendations, you know, between now and the end of the semester. Mm-hmm. And then we won't see each other right till the fall as a group.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's acceptable to you, what I'll just be doing is working directly with Mary on it, understanding that it's not that I don't want to get back and be with you,
mm-hmm.
but rather than waiting,
Yeah.
And so, and then based on Mary's, by Mary's lights, if it comes upon a situation where it would be good to get together again, or to get you together again, I'll just depend on Mary to sort of indicate that. So as soon as I get it, I'll be looking at it. Some of these things, like I say, there's already some discussion going on in the senior staff, which is just the first way to begin to make people understand that it's a value of the institution that I want to see happen. But I'm dying to see the details on this, so I'll digest it as soon as you get it to me. That's great. It's good that you guys keep working on this. And like Mary said earlier, I never would have championed the idea of doing this survey at all if we weren't going to try to focus on ways to make things better. So I think it's terrific that it's so detailed and granular and focused on things that can actually make a difference. And I can see that
the result I wanted to mention is at bargaining at the last week, had a contract that was concluded with one of our unions subject to ratification, and we added in a provision about reclassification based upon the work that had been done. The contract had no provision. And it was one of the issues that the staff there was always complaining about, but there wasn't really a mechanism to bring it forward smoothly. And so we said, why not use the principles of this whole effort? And we wrote up a paragraph that liked it and in the new contract.
That's great. That's a real concrete result. Shouldn't you be in a nicer chair or something now that you're a trustee? I mean, maybe not. Okay.
I guess one of the things we talked about at our last meeting was the idea of staff as a strategic priority.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that a little bit with the trustees. They had mentioned that the students that they met with the night before talked about access, and when they really drilled down to it, what did access mean? And I think there's a few things. And one, Mary, I appreciate everything you do on behalf of staff, and by no means is this a reflection of that. And David, as when I started, the same time you started here, as a student, I've always looked to you and appreciate the things that you've done living in the dorms, having students to your house, doing those sorts of things. But I think one of the things that could really help the culture is how do we message to the staff that they really are important. Some of the things is you hear, and they might not all be true, but you hear, increasing things for students, looking at faculty recruitment. You look at the faculty break room versus the staff break room, way different. So how do we create a sense that the staff is really a priority, and that there's a lot of time and energy going in? We had the recognition event, but many of the folks at the table were all of us. It means a lot, when Mary stopped by the hotel school and said thank you to some folks and said hello, thanks for being here.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you come, David, and thank us for the hard work that we do, that means a lot. So how do we get, and I know the senior administrators are busy and trustees are busy, but how do we get them down to the line level folks who aren't engaged? How do we get them to walk through a dining hall and shake hands with the SO2 and say, we really appreciate taking 1,600 swipes a day, you make a difference here. How do we do that more? How can we work with you, and how can you work with us to really create that as a priority? Because I think that's one thing we're missing. We're a great employer, and it's a great place to live and work and study. But what's that next step that we're going to take to really make it a staff a priority and really message that and do it in a way that's genuine and really mean it?
Yeah, I wish I had a glib answer to tell you. You know that I feel that way. But the question is how to make it real at the individual staff level. There's just no question about it that in the order of where resources are spent at universities, the faculty and students are always going to be seen by anybody, no matter what anybody tells you, as having a little different status to students because they're the single biggest source of revenue. Aside from all of the high-minded stuff about that's why we're here, it's 26% of all the revenue, even including the medical school in the denominator, it's the biggest source of revenue. And the sort of conventional wisdom, the rhetoric, is that if you don't have the best faculty, nobody else will come. But we all understand that varies a lot according to the area that you're in. And because I don't come from a background in undergraduate education, being a doc, most of the people I would interact with would be staff and not faculty throughout a medical system, just like it's true at the hospital, at the vet school. So for people who don't have that kind of background, it's very, very hard to get them to see the faces in this large group of people, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. They just sort of see it as a some sort of a amorphous mass entity. And the attitude sometimes is that there's just no way to do it. There's too many staff and too few leaders. But I think it's really important that you remind me of that. So here's a couple of things that I don't want to promise something that I can't do, but either through Mary or conferring with Mary, it's not like you have to go through Mary to talk to me, but Mary has such a good sense of proportion of the thing. If there's more ways that you can get me to go do something that takes a few minutes, Mary has like two or three of them coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Two or three minutes?
No, two or three. Two or three of these things. I can't remember what they. I think one is the workday staff,
mm-hmm.
and then there's another thing we're doing for somebody being recognized. So Mary knows like how to get things on the menu. It's also good for you to feel. And I mean you, not just Tanya, but the leadership role, empowered to come right to me, if you would, to copy Mary, just with an email and say, here's an example of one of those things. And then I'll take it right to the person who does the schedule. Beyond that, I think besides my own example doing it, I will talk about this in our meetings. And also, we're going to be with the senior leadership in 3 weeks or something like that. And I'd like to bring this up and talk about it. But then there's the deeper issue. I mean, maybe deeper isn't fair, but there's the symbolic thing of saying thank you. And then there's the fact that if we made a dent in the areas where there's not responsiveness mm-hmm. or not apparent discussion going on, like you were saying, Tanya, I think that also speaks volumes, maybe louder, you know, than the simple recognition. So that's the other thing, is that I will pay attention to the recommendations when they come. But in the meantime, let me try to do better in terms of getting also other suits to come around and do that.
So this is right. So we have the real issues of the organization that we learn from the survey. And they really are real issues. I mean, if you can't, this is only a game in town, if you can't create your career and move it around effectively, and that really is a problem for Cornell as much as it is for the people here. And we need to break that issue through and figure it out and deal with that. And as much as I now think I talk about Workday in my sleep, we had to have that system to be able to get at this issue. Without a system, you can't actually affect some of these issues, so we finally have one after 13 years of trying to get one, and we actually have one. So we'll start to be able to break through some of these issues for the first time, because the system is an empowering tool. You should put it in the hands of people. We have a long way to go, but that's the beginning of that. But so the first thing is, you actually have to fix some of the problems that we have. So people have to be able to have a way to manage their careers and move around and use the power of their talent to get to better places to work. Because that's how you actually improve the place. If you're in a good place to work, you stay there and grow your career. If you're in a bad place, you leave and people don't go there, and that place gets sick. And that's the power of empowerment. But the other thing that you mentioned is real, and there's two levels of it being real. One is, and I'll just make this observation, when I first came, employee days, all the leaders served. I've missed one. It's very hard for me to get people to go serve there now. Mm-hmm. And it's very maddening. We beg for people to go. I just can't understand why. It's so much fun. Charlie Slager always goes that little ahead, and he brings his whole family, and Steve Johnson goes. But it's just getting harder and harder to get people to go and serve there. So it's symbolic to me. There's a point of that, which is you're going to serve meals to the people that support and serve the students. That's the point of those.
Mm-hmm.
So it's symbolic to me. So that's one thing. But the other is that your work units are where most people are. And so a lot of what you saw in the survey is about what happens in those work units. When they're good, they're very, it's like the girl with the curls. When they're good, they're very, very good and people are happy. And they don't actually want to take a chance on leaving that, even if their career is pretty much sunk. They're afraid of going someplace else. So the other is, what do we do to create better leaders in more parts of the organization that know how to recognize, acknowledge, support? So we have to do both. Yes, you absolutely have to have a more grateful and rewarding top of the organization. We have to do better at that. But we also have to have leaders in the middle of the organization that know what that means. And I if I knew this, with all due respect, I like you all, I'd be making a lot more money someplace. We have to figure that middle out as well, because if it was only the top, it would ring very, very hollow. So we have to do them both.
With the visibility of the students, you know, since you hired Shanika, it seems
that... And I have honesty today, too. But
yeah, Mary, in case you didn't notice, you are, yeah, like, seriously.
Welcome to the club, Mary.
Welcome to the club, like, a long time ago, Mary.
I was just going to say, Dean Gutt at the Johnson level, he does a good job, apparently. He has once a month, a birthday month, so of the whole business school, regardless of your line level and all, if you're an August person, there's one day in that month that he's there, and every employer that... I mean, that's just a simple touch that you could have at your deans and VP level that you could share, that might help, because it has enough, it's a fixed event once a month, a dean or a VP could have, you know, and that's just so it's, I give credit for that, and you can do that right away.
No,
that's a simple touch without having to pull everybody at the ramen room and lots of lasagna on the
plate.
Well,
but the nice thing about that is that you get to meet people outside of your own.
It is nice.
So I'm sort of surprised. Who used to serve there that doesn't
When
serve
I first
anymore?
Came, it, now they didn't invite the deans to do it, but when I was first there, every vice president went every single time.
And why aren't the deans there?
Well, now we invite the deans. So when they're there, they go. Yeah. But, you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, I think, honestly, I think it's travel schedule. I don't think it's that people that are in town don't go. I think travel schedules make it almost impossible now.
Yeah, that's the reason I missed the last one.
Yeah.
But you know, it's interesting when you do it, it is fun.
Yeah,
it is
people fun. Have a great time. When you can get them there, they're always like, that was so much fun. But I think to staff, or just to reinforce your point, you know, I can have 100 reasons why I wasn't at something. They don't care.
Yeah.
You just weren't there.
Yeah.
So I think too, Mary, the whole part about the mid-level folks, I think hearing from people who are closer to you, even on a more regular basis, a thank you and I appreciate you, is really helpful. You know, when we did the Red Days, the deans, if they were in town, they should have been there. I would say when I was at mine, the dean walked past, didn't stop. And that, to me, was very reflective and unfortunate.
Yeah.
But I can say, I work with David Felchew, and every day, if he's in the office and I'm leaving, he says, thank you. Yeah. I would do anything for him.
Yeah.
Whatever he asks me to do, if he needs help with something, I'd be there, because I know that he appreciates the work that I do.
No, it's really important.
And, you know, everybody should hear on a more regular basis.
Definitely.
I can also add that one of the challenges I see with the staff and from the upper administration to the staff relationship is recognizing the diversity of the staff. One of the things what always bothers me is that when you hear stories about staff, it's always an example of the residence hall or the line cook. And I think those are very important jobs, but there's also a recognition that a lot of the staff members here have advanced degrees. They're a part of professional organizations. They have languages and competencies. And is that being recognized within the organization, or do we all think that everybody here is just simply administrative assistant? And I think that's what, for me personally, it becomes very frustrating. You know, I work in a mission, and you hear faculty, wow, it's so simple, you can use it. And I spent 2 years of my life doing research on this. I present at professional conferences on what I do. This is not just a job for me, this is a vocation for me, and this is a career. And making sure that the upper administration recognizes that fact too. For some people, this is just not simply the hourly, you know, I'm trying to get a check to go home, but I'm trying to make a difference, and this is my calling in life.
Mm-hmm. So who is it, Curtis, that you feel says that? Because our data certainly doesn't support the upper administration view that most people are in line cook positions.
I don't think it was, I'm saying that's the story I hear.
Okay.
So I think a prime example, when you mentioned the story, that was the story. It wasn't the story about this admission counselor who, you know, has a single parent whose child is spending the night at my house because they're traveling for 3 weeks out of the fall semester in order to recruit the incoming class. I always hear the story. This is, but you know, it's just recognizing the breadth and the diversity. And I think when you look at retention, at least, and this is all anecdotal, those are the people who I start seeing lead.
Yeah.
It's the people who have the advanced degrees, and you get opportunities, and you get emails from UTIN, like, hey, why don't you, apply here or go apply at Stanford? So I see a lot of, I don't want to say like the non-effects, really kind of stay in much more in line compared to the non-exempt staff, you know, or the exempt staff. I feel like they're more transient because this is a commitment to Ithaca. Like, for me, I did not come to Ithaca because I liked Ithaca. I came to Ithaca because of Cornell.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. That's a very good point.
It's a very good point. It's also true, by the way, of the faculty as well. If you happen to be in a faculty field that's really hot, a lot of stuff going on, money flowing and stuff, it's one thing. If you happen to be in a field that nobody really cares about, it's frustrating in the same way. The difference is the job security aspect, you know, which is, and also the recognition, as you say, but it's a real issue.
I think our challenge in trying to get at your point is to try to create a profile of the staff that celebrates all of those staff that we have here. Because our community, and in fact, I'll even go farther, that celebrates everybody who works here, because we have staff. We have academic non-professorial, and we have professorial staff. And I think one of the challenges that we have here is we segment so much that we create castes and hierarchies. And really, this whole place runs because everybody works here.
Yeah.
And so what we need to be able to do, to your point, is create that diversity of contribution without assignment of hierarchy. And we struggle to do that here. That we really need everybody doing what they do to make this place run. It's a pretty complex tapestry of contribution.
You know, also, this is probably going to sound like a small thing, but I think it could be helpful. The fact that you present research on something, and it's not seen in your day-to-day job, even though it's behind it and it's what's informing what you do, we tend not to talk about that. We tend not to feature it in the Cornell Chronicle and stuff like that. You know, we've talked about this in past years about, different universities do this different ways. Some have a regular feature on staff, but then people tend to think, well, I don't look at that thing. It's just like a staff feature, so I'm not going to look at that, or fold it into the normal area. And tell me again, just while we're talking about this one aspect of it, do you feel like... paw print versus, not that they're mutually exclusive, having some sort of a feature about three-dimensional aspects of what a staff person does in the Cornell Chronicle, would that make any difference if there was, not a staff section or a staff day or a staff portion, but just that if you...
We should have them give us the hit rates on the two. Because I think...
Two being paw print, yeah.
I read the Cornell Chronicle. I don't read the
policy. I read them both to see what they're there, but most people I ask, the students don't read anything except their text, you know. But no, seriously, anything I write, they just delete automatically. And they tell me that, which is cool. At least you know it. But then people tend to tell me that they don't read the paw print, and they tell me that they don't read the Cornell Chronicle. They look at whatever is on the website. So you don't have to even go one step behind. So I will check into that.
At least for us, because HR's articles are now put into the paw print, they're not put in the Chronicle.
Yeah.
And so we've been tracking now, and the hit rate on the paw print is very low.
Yeah.
And so we are getting a lot of complaints that people don't know about changes, and so we've been starting to track, and we are getting a sense of what.
And I think.
So do you think those ought to be in the Chronicle, Mary?
Well, we're starting to push for at least things that people have to write legally,
I think part of it, too, Dave. Oh, sorry.
No, just thinking that a feature like this, no reason that couldn't be in Chronicle.
So can I tell a quick story before we have to go?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when I got in trouble with Pete Meinick for making me sit down? Do you remember why? Do you remember the thing that I got? So we were running out of time at a board meeting in May, And my time got taken up by some other vice president who ran overtime. And so I stood up to give my presentation. My presentation was on awards that staff had won.
Mm-hmm.
I worked,
including a slideshow.
It was a slideshow of awards outside of the university that staff had won. And I didn't get the time allotted for my slideshow to run. And so the chairman of the board at that time wanted to stand up and have that not run. And I think that I, in a very soft-spoken and deferential way, asked very kindly to let my slideshow run.
That's not what happened. What happened was he said, we're going to have to move on, and Mary looked him right in the eye with this cold look that makes your blood run cold and said, I'm not done. And he sat down. He's a big guy. He's played football. He sat right down. And the color went out of his face. That's exactly what happened.
But it was because we had
I'm not done.
On this presentation that showed all these awards that staff had gotten, and I had waited and waited to give this presentation, to your point,
yeah.
Because it had, was in the midst of the downturn.
Right.
And so we made time to do one of those again. We have a new chairman.
Why not do that? But you were going to say something.
I was just going to say that if you look at how the Cornell Chronicle, the Chronicle comes into your email, and you look at how the paw print comes in, to me, it very much looks like the staff paper is a second-class citizen.
Sure.
And that's unfortunate. I mean, and that right there is goes back to the whole we should all be parts of the chair. Or
well,
the
that's what I was thinking when Curtis was talking.
Yes, it's the idea of one Cornell.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think they can be separate.
There's four legs to the chair, but, you know, there's the alumni, there's the faculty, there's the staff, there's the students, but it's really one Cornell.
Yeah.
I don't think that staff would argue the point that the role they play here is different. But it's a just as important a role. I mean, it's just a different role.
Well, in some areas, it's more important than any other general role. I mean, if you ask the person encountering staff in certain circumstances and certain interactions, whether that was more important than someone giving an English lecture, there'd be no comparison to what it is. But I also think people just don't know. They just don't know. What people's backgrounds are.
Well, that's why they don't work Memorial Day anymore.
Not that we would do that to you. We wouldn't do it to you, but we could just make the point. But we wouldn't do that because.
Well, you know what happened today is. Did you know what happened at 300 today? Is there's Kent wants to put a sink somewhere so that when the staff are serving things, they don't have to run into the bathroom to wash things up. And so they went on a field trip today to look at some other part of campus where they have such a thing, and everybody disappeared. And it was tough, you know. Decided the only logical thing to do, I went over to Chris, who works with Provost, and made her do all kinds of stuff that we had to do. Thought that was fair, you know. But that was the very same thing you're talking about. I mean, everybody did disappear. Everybody went away. I don't know where they went exactly to see a sink.
Oh,
that's probably
where they went.
Is that where they went?
Amazing. Well, we have taken 8 or so more minutes of your time than we were allotted.
Okay, it's a pleasure, though. It's good.
Anything before we go for, you see me all the time.
This is probably walking into a hole, but I'm curious on your personal take about college tuition. I mean, I know it's a touch point for everybody who has children. You know, I'm just wondering what your personal take is. How is it going to be 120 when my 8-year-old is? I mean, what I know that the college presidents are talking about it, and I know it's a concern for everybody. I'm just curious what your perspective is.
Yeah, I think about this probably more than any other single issue, and it's way over the top. And the issue is not in places like Cornell, because in fact, for the vast majority of people. Not everybody, but for the vast majority of people, you can find a way to go to Cornell at much, much less than the sticker price. But, in fact, something like 60% of the families in America can go here for very, very low money because of the massive, massive philanthropy and financial aid. But if you're in a state school that has no endowment, which is the way most of them are, and even if the tuition was $20,000, but it used to be $6,000, it's absolutely outrageous what's happening. And the only thing, the only part of the argument that I don't agree with is the concern about debt that people bring up. The stories about people having, you know, finishing undergrad $100,000 in debt, almost nobody finishes undergrad. The median is about $24,000. And I personally think $24,000 to have a college education is okay. There are some families, for other reasons, that have to borrow $60,000, $70,000, $80,000. And so I think we're headed for a train wreck. I don't think it's going to be helped by online technology or anything else. I think what's going to happen is people are going to insist on the college length of college being telescoped shorter.
So not 4 years.
Not 4 years. And I went to college in 3 years because I came from a family that just could not afford to do 4 years. And when I was in high school, this is like a very long time ago, they didn't have AP courses. But you could go to a local college in the afternoon or early evening if you hit some certain grade point average and get college credit just on your own time and pay for it yourself. And then when I finished, with the help of 2 summers, I was able to finish in 3 years. And that was 100% because, you know, there's just no way to finance the, you know, living expenses and all the kind of stuff to go for 4 years. So I think that I think it should be possible to become a physician in 3 years. You can become an attorney in 3 years, but it takes 9 years to get a PhD in English. Something's going to give on these long lengths of time. And I think that the graduate and postdoc and professional experience is unbelievably worse in terms of the balance of payments than undergrad, because people tend not to put a lot of financial aid into those. If you see people graduating from the vet college with a much lower expectation of money than a neurosurgeon would make, and the debts are sky high. So even though it's very important, I don't think there'll be a broad pushback on that, but there'll be broad pushback on this undergrad. And I think what'll happen is we'll see the length of the time telescope. And the only bad thing about that will be that the pressure on the kids and families will be massive to decide vocational interest, you know, right off the bat and not stray from that interest. And you know how it is, you go through and you change what you do in life based on, you know, opportunities or whatever, roadblocks that come up, and you find a way around them. And it will make it harder, I think, for people to understand, young people, that it'll be good to get a little more basic grounding. It'll be too extravagant.
Well, there's a big buzz now, like, is college worth it?
Right.
And yeah.
That's the question.
Yeah. It's pretty hard to argue that it's not worth it, even on cold-blooded, crass financial grounds. The unemployment rate is way lower for college graduates. And even though there's a lot of slowdown in hiring, my kid went to Stanford and graduated right at the middle of the first year of the recession. It took him almost 10 months to get a job. But he got a job. You know, he got a job. And so people have to think carefully about that statement. If you're in a family situation where you have to borrow to do anything, and you end up borrowing $70,000, $80,000, then that's a pretty fair question to ask. $24,000, an average family, and the lifetime earnings differential is $1 million or $1.5 million, depending on the degree. It's sort of hard to argue, but it's easy for me to say. It's hard when you don't have a job, and so that's that period where I think if it was 3 years, I think you're going to see a lot of push on this.
And I even though I think David's right that we're in a stratosphere that we're very lucky, we get pressure on our tuition, and we will continue to. And it's part of the reason that we continue to have pressure about the size of our workforce and all of our costs. And that's not going to go away. I mean, 60% of our costs and more when you add in the ancillary costs of the staffing. It's a real issue, and it will continue to be. And then when you add the cost of financial aid in, which is how we balance the cost of our tuition against the cost of financial aid, it's a reality. Residential higher ed doesn't really take our cost. It's a cost rent.
Yeah.
The tuition is what you have to give us. It really helped my family a lot.
One of the most important benefits.
It's unbelievably important benefit, and it's going to be more that way, and especially when you go beyond undergraduate education, the stuff is so expensive.
I think also just adding to what Leslie was saying, part of the, I think something that compounds the problem is that undergraduate degrees don't really guarantee you a whole lot. You know, you said your son went to Stanford, prestigious school. It took him 10 months to get in.
Good.
A lot of places, students like that at Stanford expect to have a job before they graduate.
Yeah.
So undergraduate degree, you know, if you get a serving position at a restaurant, you might be doing okay. The movement I see is like towards specialized degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we have degree programs to connect specialized areas so that they can work together.
Yeah.
And how is that driving up costs of degrees? And, you know, maybe 24,000 is a medium, but after they get their master's or their PhD, they're probably a bit closer to 100,000.
Yeah, it took me 21 years to pay my loans off. I barred my way through. So, no, you're exactly right.
And it creates a lot of societal issues, too.
It does.
People who have a specialized knowledge of one thing and not an understanding of how other areas are affected.
And how to even how to vote or be a good citizen. No, it's really true.
So I'm just interested to see how that's going to affect the issue that you two were talking about.
Yeah, I think the pressure that we'll see is people will want to, and this is no like criticism of the families, they'll want their kids not to get liberal arts type degrees. And when you look at the data for how you could get a job in general, the year that my kid took 10 months was 08-09 when things were so horrible. But even then, you know, you got a job. If you get a degree in computer science or an engineering discipline, the vast majority of the time people do end up with jobs before they graduate, but they may not be in those fields. You have a quantitative background and you end up working 60, 70 hours a week as a first year person in a finance company. But this is a big issue. One more quick point further to Mary's point about the what I'm going to call the balancing act, the delicate dance here. Right now, because of Mary's effective rhetoric and my sensibilities and so on, we have this thing balanced here right now where the tuition goes up a lot, financial aid goes up massively, and the balance of payments is still positive. Still bring more in by raising tuition, even though the financial aid goes up, enough to allow flexibility for everything else that we want to do to reach equilibrium. But if any of those things got perturbed, you know what I mean? Like if the board wouldn't approve a tuition increase that's twice inflation, then a lot of those things would start to unravel. And it's interesting that although there has been pushback from the board, as Mary said, the combination of thinking what would happen if you really took a whack at that revenue source, at the end of the day, the board unanimously supports that. So, you know, it's interesting to see whether that'll be that way 20 years from now. I don't know. I think it'll be that way for a long time in the very unusual places like Cornell because of the excess demand. There were 40,600 applications. I never would have gotten to college against those odds. I mean, seriously, never. Not that kind of college anyway. 40,600 for 3,150 slots. So you know, like a lot of good people got turned down, right?
Yeah, exactly.
People who could easily do the work.
And we've had deans who said, you know, 2/3 of the people that applied could have been successful. I mean, it's hard to turn down that many good people.
Yeah. Thanks for having me here.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, you up.
Yeah, so Workday is up.
Right. Yay.
And so just, you know, for you to know, it was almost 2-year effort on the part of people who are working really hard on your behalf. There will be mistakes in the data because you haven't seen it before. When you find them, try to keep in mind that these are your colleagues. And so when you present the problem that needs to be solved, remember to be the change you hope to see in the world and prevent it. And
I think we should sing and don't get really mad at her when there's a problem. Don't get mad at Mary, it's bad for your health.
Bye, thank you. So if we can take a quick look at last week's meeting minutes. Does anybody have any comments on the minutes?
I just wanted to add under resolution. I just wanted to say, like, when E.S. says he feels, I just wanted to say at this time.
What page are you on?
My page.
Okay.
I guess I'm reading that at the time.
Okay. Also, does not like the EBC. Okay. First paragraph.
Right after.
Right. C. Ferguson said he feels maybe not award or the at worthy at this time.
Yes.
Okay. So what do you want the sentence to say? Or do you want that struck, or?
Just that open forum reported that this is not doing that college.
Okay. Oh, so instead of your name,
right.
Michelle Stefanski Seymour said that.
Open forum reflected.
Said open forum reflected.
Okay.
That this is not true in the Vet College. Okay. So Michelle Stefanski Seymour said that the open forum reflected that this is not true in the Vet College. Okay. Any other changes? I'd like to make a motion that we approve the minutes with the two changes by Curtis and Michelle.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Great. Thank you. Okay. In the interest of saving time, I don't have much to report. You heard the employee survey follow-up. We're finalizing our report, and that should go to Dave in the next couple of days. Meeting with Mary was just, again, talking about the survey and kind of where we're going with that. And everyone, most everyone here was at the breakfast, but I thought it went really well.
Good food.
Good food, yes. Absolutely. So moving on to old business, which is resolution number 5. This is the one that I put forward at our last meeting. There was a suggestion by Greg to add a component in there on the Opperman Award. I don't know if people have had an opportunity to look at it.
I don't have enough for everybody, but we can share.
The one I just emailed.
Yeah. I read it, yeah. Sounds good.
So I'd like to open up for discussion if folks have any.
I'm sorry, I skimmed it earlier. Is there a financial gift, Becky? What kind of...
So there
where,
at this
funding it, yeah.
So at this point, there is not a financial gift. What we've done at the very end is said that there will be an ad hoc committee put together through the assembly to kind of establish what the criteria would be, and I think at that point, we can discuss if there would be some sort of financial component to that, but that we would have to involve, you know, our looking at our budget and if we could afford something. I don't think we would ask someone else to fund it. We'll ask for it the next meeting.
I really had wanted to be here for that discussion, and unfortunately I was in Yale weeks ago for about 3 days when we brought this forward. But one of the things that really got me to think about this was our fascist, we kind of represented it, and about 2 or 3 months ago, Mary was invited to faculty senate to talk about faculty workplace issues. So, of course, being in her department and in the workplace area, she had asked me beforehand to come. Basic data and everything. And as I was sitting there through the presentation, she had gotten through, you know, the first 10 minutes or so where she was highlighting some issues with faculty, some concerns with dual career, all sorts of things like that. And then she stopped and she said, and I know I'm supposed to be talking about faculty work-life heritage, but I want to bring something up that I think is very, very important that I want you all to really think about. And she went on to my surprise to go and share the results of the staff survey. And she went on to say, I cannot enough tell you what this guest has been through, and I ask you as the faculty senate to think about, I know you've all experienced things over the last few years, but this guest has experienced at so much greater a level, and I ask you to think about this. I ask you to treat people more civil in their behavior. She went on in her very eloquent way, and I was blown away because that was her opportunity to connect with Emma, and they had asked, you know, faculty or whatever. She spent at least half of that presentation going on and presenting about the staff survey and pleading to the be more considerate of the staff, be more supportive of the staff. And I was blown away because that's not what they asked her to present on, and she took that opportunity to do that. And that's what I was like, and the thing that was very refreshing to me is a lot of the faculty members asked a lot of very good questions. We said, here, can we get copies of this? We'd like to read more into it. So they were very cheap.
Putting stuff in perspective for them.
Yep. And that's when I just said, wow, that was like so far above and beyond. And that's what really made me feel, you know, it's those behind the scenes things that sometimes we don't see in the head. I know that I would have never seen that she took that opportunity. But they just asked her to do that in any way, shape, or form and said, you know what, I'm going to have them as an audience and I'm going to do this. And she did it. And I thought it was very brave of her to do that too, because, you know, the faculty sometimes can not respond well when they're not getting what they had originally asked for, which was just to talk about faculty workload issues. So it just blew me away. And that's when I had said something to my after it, and I wasn't able to share that up until now.
Thanks, Linda. Other thoughts or comments on the resolution?
Sounds great.
Mm-hmm. All in favor of Resolution 5, Vice President of Human Resources and Safety Services Appreciation? Someone's got a second, right?
Second.
Like, looking at you, Grace. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. I'm trying, but everybody put their hand down so quickly. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. And that is who is here. So there are no opposed and no abstain.
That's fine,
yeah. Excellent. Thank you, guys. What I'll do with this is send it to President Scorton without sending it to Mary. So that he sees it first. And then what I think would be really great is in May, the EA has the opportunity to present to the Board of Trustees, and I would like, with David's permission, to share this at that time, and if whomever from this group can be there to join me for that, I think it would be a nice opportunity.
I'll be there. Yeah.
You can.
Where would it be at? What venue?
It is here, and it's usually at Sibley.
Oh.
No. Yeah. What's over? The cantilever room. Oh, maybe. Yeah. It depends. Sometimes it's either at the Statler, over at
the trustee meeting.
Maybe, do you know? Alan, where's the trustee meeting in May?
I don't know yet. It's usually in the amphitheater, isn't it?
At the hotel? No.
He's never gone there.
No, I've either been at Sage or there. So it depends. It'll be in one of those places on campus.
I think we should just have a happy hour with her at the...
We could.
Oh, I love that idea.
At your... what's the bar called that you can read out? Yeah, the region. We should just...
Okay.
Happy hour.
Yeah.
A little bit. We'll just a little bit.
Greg, you got 2 minutes. You want to do a UA up? 1 minute if you want to do a UA update.
Real quick, from the UA's perspective, there's been a group of all the various constituent groups and assemblies that are working on policy 6.4. One of the big questions is, you know, with sexual harassment or less sexual harassment, things like that, how you treat a student employee. Do you treat them as an employee through Alan Mittman's channels? Do you treat them as a student through the judicial administrators? So there's a little bit of a conversation right now going on about that. We just passed a resolution that changes the campus code that notifies misconduct of any student or any university organization that's governed by the code can now be released to the public. So if an acapella group cheats on their finances,
that can go out there. Greek organizations have had this in place for years with Hazing back from LWU. But what we're looking to do is create an organizational website that any misconduct or organization found to be misconduct of the code or violation of the code can be posted at so that the community is more informed and can and use that to make better choices of joining committees. A lot of discussion still about freedom of speech, freedom of expression. Should the code be changed? Shouldn't the code be changed to reflect those things? So that's taking place right now. We hope to have some resolution by the end of this semester, but I think that would be a stretch. I think that'll play off into the fall semester because there's just too many people that are too loud and too energized about it on both sides of the fence to really get something to sort of settle and come down and really impact something positive. But President Courtney and Jim Mingle, University Council, put a report out on it and said the code did need to change. And that was the first one that got out there. The faculty are going to probably do another report that says it doesn't. So there's a lot going on in the assembly right now in a short period of time. Unfortunately, one of the challenges we have at the UA is it's not as energized as some assemblies, so it can. We're not rushing at last minute because it's taken us so long to get this up and going. So that's where we're at.
Thank you. Anything else from anyone? Well, thank you all for coming.
Thank you,
John. Adjourned here.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.